Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Ruby Rogues podcast. This week on our panel, we have John Epperson.
Hello, everybody.
Luke Stutters.
Hello.
I always want to say Luke Stutz. I think I've seen that on Twitter or something.
That's my nickname.
Yeah. Dave Kimura.
Hey, everyone.
I'm Charles Max Wood from DevChat.tv. And this week, we're going to be talking to Joe Santos. I had three names and I lost it.
Yeah.
Joe Santos Garcia. There we go. I found it.
Yeah, man. Joe Santos Garcia, a.k.a. Coding Phase, a.k.a. CodingPhase.com. Hey, guys.
Ooh, you say that like a YouTuber. .com.
I don't know. It's like it's now like part of my speech now. Every time I talk, I'm like, hey, guys, where are you from? It's like codingphase.com. You know? Yeah, man. I don't know. It's natural now.
Leveling up is important. I spend at least an hour every day learning ways I can improve my business or take a break and listen to a good book. If you're looking to level up, I recommend you start out with the 12-week year as a system to plan out where you want to end up and how to get the results you want. You can get it free by going to audibletrial.com/code. That's audibletrial.com/code. Yeah, I say devchat.tv, but .tv just doesn't roll off the tongue that way. Anyway, yeah, so Coding Phase. So what is Coding Phase?
Yeah, so Coding Phase basically started with a social network, right? Pretty much, you know, let's go a little bit more back. Basically, I started with a YouTube channel where I just put one video one day and it was like, hey, why you should learn how to code, right? And that was like at the end of 2016. And then from there, people started following me and I was like, hey, this is cool. And then I say, wouldn't it be nice to have a community of developers that are learning how to code and let's just create it. So I created codingphase.com. It was supposed to be that website dev.2 or like Hashnode. Well, Hashnode and dev.2 is now. That's what codingphase.com was supposed to be back then. But so many people wanted to just like ask me questions all the time. So then it just became basically a place where I teach people how to code, you know, in my own way, how I wish somebody would have taught me. So that's what it is now.
That makes sense. So one thing that I like to ask of other content creators, and I'm going to kind of start making it a theme of these shows, is so what's the big question you're trying to answer, right? What's the big question we're going to answer in this episode? And what's the big question that you're trying to answer at codingphase.com?
Yeah. Well, in codingphase.com, what I wanted to really do was to basically teach people in a way where it could be engaging. And then at the same time, they could see somebody that they can relate to. Like when I came in 2011, I was learning online, you know, websites like CodeSchool.com, freaking YouTube, blogs, you know, a whole bunch of different websites. I felt like I couldn't relate to somebody. I mean, I'm coming from an inner city. I'm from New York City, Queens, Brooklyn, right? So there was nobody that looked like me, that talked like me, that, I don't know, well, we call the source, right? That I couldn't relate to anybody. So I was like, you know what? How can I create a platform where people who are maybe inner city kids or people who are interested in coding, but feel like maybe I'm not smart enough. Maybe I'm not, you know, the guy that's really good in math or was really good in science or anything like that. How can I help them out and show them that anybody can do this, right? So that's what we really try to do at Coding Phase. Just show that anybody can do this and doesn't matter your background and what you're doing, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how you said you didn't really have role models where you were from. So how did you get into programming then?
Well, my story with programming is crazy. So I was really into Dragon Ball Z when I was a little kid. So back in like 1999, 2000, right? So I used to go to the library and I used to go to a whole bunch of different websites. And what I did was I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if I could actually upload the videos for Dragon Ball Z into the internet, you know? And back then there was like Real Player. So it wasn't like there's no YouTube, there's no Vimeo. Like you upload a video and to your server and then you will use a Real Player. So somehow I figured out how other people were doing it. And what I used to do was just go into, was it the view source of the page? And then somehow I figured out how to create a website and then upload the videos. And then it was crazy because, you know, probably like a month later, I had 500,000 people on my website. of just watching videos of Dragon Ball Z that I uploaded online. And then one day I got somebody send me a letter from the ISP. I think it was like Roadrunner back then. I think I forgot the company, but they sent me a letter like, hey man, this is like from the FBI. You can't upload copyright content. Yeah, so I was like 14 years old and my mom read that and she's like, you can't be on the internet. So she she turned it off for me. So I never went back into programming from the age of 14 till the age of 24. So at 24, after doing like all type of jobs, you know, all the BS jobs that's out there, I went to a BS community college too. So then after I go to this BS community college, I was doing IT and I was like, man, I thought I was going to be, you know, working in my head. This is how I thought about it. Hey, I'm graduating from college. I'm going to go to big company in the city. I'm going to wear a suit and tie, you know, it's like, hey, brand new Joe, right? And then when I got there, it's like, hey man, by the way, you're only making $45,000 a year. And the guy that's been here for 10 years, he's making $65,000 a year. So I was like, okay, this is not the place I want to be, right? Because there's no growth.
Yeah.
So then one day I'm like at Starbucks and I saw this guy. He was just there on a computer, I guess, writing something. And I'm like, bro, what you doing here? Like every day I come here from lunch and I see you here. And he's like, well, I work from, you know, I'm a developer. I code. I build web applications and things like that. And then he's like, you should try it out. And I was like, oh, cool. Let me try to get into it. And from there on, I just started looking online and seeing how do I get into the industry and how do I learn how to code on my own without having to go and get another degree, you know, and another 4 years of school doing computer science or something like that. So that's how I just got into programming and here we are, you know?
I love it. I love all the personal stories.
Yeah.
that's who we are, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, Luke.
How long did it take from that initial, like, this is what I want to do, to feeling like, yeah, I'm doing it?
Well, it was more like the first thing I did was, you know, I built my website and I was like, let me try to build something that's interesting, something that people are into. And at the time I was doing music. So somehow I figured out how to work with WordPress, and, you know, WordPress is just more like you install it and then now you get to post. So once I did that, then I started getting really interested in how can I create more things besides what's being given to me in the plugins. So once I started learning a little bit of PHP and started learning a little bit of, you know, CSS, all of those things, then, you know, then I feel more comfortable and say, you know what, man, this is what I want to do. And now it was just about how do I figure out how much do I learn? Because, you know, when you're a first time, you know, somebody trying to learn it for the first time, you're like, man, how much is enough for you to get a job? And then you see that the web is so huge. It's like so many different languages, so many different skills that you got to pick up. So I literally took me a whole year to like really get a job because I thought that I needed to master everything about JavaScript at the moment. I was like, this is everything I need to learn. So I try to learn every single method. And for whatever reason, I thought that I needed to memorize it. So,
was crazy. You do. You have to memorize every single JavaScript method.
I was waiting for you to say, so I did. And then I was going to be like, no. You weren't too stupid for programming. I'm too stupid for programming.
I just want to point out that there are zero JavaScript methods. There's only JavaScript functions, guys.
Oh no, they added classes in ES6.
All right. You're right.
But but it's just syntactic sugar over prototype. So technically you're correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a crazy journey. And then finally I started applying to places and, you know, I went to Twitter, failed, went to Tumblr, failed. And then I was like, wait, hold on. Am I really going to be able to get a job? And then at the end of the day, I said, you know what? I don't care what type of job it is. And I found a company, which it was like an e-commerce company and they hired me. And it was crazy. I got like $13 an hour. And I'm like, I'm like, damn, I got a degree. And I'm like making less than what I was making on my last job. But it's a, you know, it's a stepping stone, right? You get into the industry from there and then, you know, sky's the limit after that.
How long were you there? For all those people that are like, you know, jumping into the sweatshops now, like how long did you stay there?
Probably like 2 months and a half.
The sweatshops. I love it.
Yeah.
So Okay, so
you show a up, bit. They chain you to the keyboard. Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, I call them sweatshops, which is kind of, I don't know, maybe that's a little mean, but that's kind of how my perspective is on it.
Yeah, you're right. Is,
you're right. I think the industry those places, they don't treat term you is well. Startups.
No, I think there's some overlap, but Venn diagram.
Yeah, no, I think you're right because, you know, some people might think, like, I hear people that be like, man, you know, I started at the startup and, you know, I'm working, you know, 10 hours a day and they're making like 80 grand a year. I'm like, bro, I started at $13 an hour doing full time, no overtime. Sometimes the owner was like, hey, could you come in on Saturday? And I'm like, oh my God, I got to do this. Okay. Cause I just wanted to get the experience. Right. And I was like, I didn't want to wait until the quote unquote dream job came to me. I just wanted to start coding. I didn't care what it was, but you're completely right. It's like a sweatshop. A lot of companies, they do that. And it's usually like really small companies where they'd be like, hey man, how can we get somebody to come in and do our work that we was going to pay a bigger company to do? How can we come in and say, hey, you're going to get experience here, kiddo. You know, so they do that all the time.
Yeah, yep. That always works out how everyone expects too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they always are like, why do our people leave so often? I don't know. Maybe because you treat them like crap and don't pay them.
Yep.
John said that like he picked up on my sarcasm.
Okay. So, all right. So I started and still like run like a community here in Charlotte, right? That it was originally for like junior developers. So there's this huge, you know, new developer presence. And this is a constant refrain. And I can name like four or five companies in town that like, if you were my friend, I would tell you not to go work for them, right? But if you come to me and you're like, how do I get in the industry? What I tell you, I still tell you the same thing, is I tell you, you know, you can go work for these guys, but it's going to suck, like in the beginning. It just, to me, like what I'm always telling people who are new is like, you kind of have to decide what's more important to you, that your first job is everything that you ever dreamed or that you get into the industry, because you might have to wait a long time to get a good job if you don't have your foot in the door already. If you can suck it up for a little while, you can get your foot in the door faster and get into the industry faster. Mm-hmm. That's what I was
saying. Yeah. Sometimes you got to pay your dues. What I tell my students at codingfaith.com is that same thing. Like I see people that they have this idea of like, they see something on like TechCrunch or something like that, or they see a YouTuber that comes in and say, hey, I just got a job at xyz.com and they're freaking giving me $110,000 salary. And it's like the majority of people are not getting that, right? So it's either you could start working today, right? Build experience. And then from there, you could always get those jobs later on, right? Now it's up to you if you get stuck. Some people think like they're going to get stuck there forever. It's like, no, bro. Like I went in there 2 months and I was like, okay. And I just started applying to other places and they hired me because nobody wants to take that first initial risk of hiring somebody that has never worked at a company. So at least now that you have that stamp on your resume, then you're good to go.
John, I feel like we're kind of kindred spirits here, except you have a degree and I don't. I started off at a IT company they were an engineering company and I did their IT work. Now I was making like $7 an hour. It was nothing. And I stayed there for 6 years because I thought, okay, well, no degree. My dad's always beat into me. You're nobody if you don't have a degree. And so, you know, that's the good old Japanese, you know, culture there. I'm the proud failure of a son. But anyways, so I stay there
this
for
is getting a bit heavy. My God, did this story get better?
Yeah, sort
cultural
of.
Cultural guilt.
Woo! So I was there for 6 years. And then a buddy of mine says, hey, if you want to make a lateral move, we have this entry-level position, you know, come and work here. I'm like, okay. So I did. And I'm still there today. Well, I still have my same employment today. Mm-hmm. So I climbed up the ladder and I finally made it to the developer position. But during those 12 years, I've been with three different companies because they slowly just sold off the company over and over again. So it's always refreshing. You know, it's always something new because whatever project I was working on, they just said, we don't care about your projects. We just want the client base. And then they find a fit for me in the new company. So it's been interesting, but you know, I'm still kind of at my second job right now. Yeah. So never take job hunting advice from me because I really don't job hunt. 6 years in my old job and then 12 years of this one.
No, this is good. One of the things I really like about the Coding Phase YouTube channel is the professional advice you give out.
Yeah, well, I try to give people a more like a realistic advice because I feel like a lot of people that's on YouTube and in different platforms, like they give advice from where they're coming from, right? And from their results. So they'll give you an advice. Hey, I have a computer science degree. This is how I got into a job. This is how much I'm getting paid and this, this, and that. And then the average person that's actually learning at home might not have that experience. And what I try to give them is, hey, this is what happened to me. And this is what I'm seeing a lot of people that have to go through to get into the industry. And then once they're in, you know, they're in, you know, once you have the skills and you have something on your resume that shows that you have the skills and experience, then you're good to go. But at least I give them that other side that nobody talks about, I feel like.
Yeah. It's funny that we're talking through this because I'm actually working on something that's pretty similar, except it's more focused on just that continuous leveling up. But people in the beginning seem to really focus on that. And then what I find is a lot of people get comfortable and fewer people are trying to get to that next level. And I love that you're focused on people at kind of the entry level that just kind of, you know, it's like they don't even know what to do, right? You know, where I'm looking more at the people in the middle that are going, I'm kind of stuck. Right. I was learning new things and I was having all these adventures. And now I feel like I'm just kind of grinding it out every day and I don't know what to do next. But it's this interesting journey that I feel like we kind of hit in phases. Right. So, yeah, you have that initial phase where it's like I have to learn all the things to prove that I'm good enough. And then once you kind of get to that junior level or mid level, it's OK, well, I'm stuck and I don't know what to do next in order to get to the next phase of my career. And then once you get there, it's okay, well, I'm a senior person and, you know, what am I even doing here some days, right? And, right, because it's, you know, I'm doing half the stuff I do is stuff that, yeah, I've kind of seen before and I can do stuff before. And then other stuff, yeah, it's, you know, it's stuff where it's like, you know, isn't there somebody who's got less seniority or something that, you know, that could do some of this stuff because it's really mundane. And, you know, and then it's like, I don't really see any opportunities for upward movement except for management and I don't want to do management. So, you know, so they kind of go through that again, where it's like, I don't know what to do. So how do I move ahead? And it's, you know, so we hit that process. I think at multiple stages in our careers. And a lot of people don't realize that we need to get through that. And, you know, so coding phase is kind of, I like the name just in the sense that, you know, you're in this phase. How do you get through it? How do you get to the next phase? How do you get to the next level of winning, whatever that is?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's one of the reasons why I created. And I thought about that name coding phase, because I was like, you go through phases, even like myself, like right now, I feel like what you were just talking about was a phase that I went through 3 years ago, where, you know, at first, you know, you start as a junior developer, right? First, you can't even call yourself a junior developer. You're just some guy trying to learn how to code. Then from there, you get hired. Now you're a junior developer. You're still building up the skills, trying to get that experience. Then from there, you know, 2-3 years later, you are getting more complex projects. You're a mid-level developer. Then you get to a point where now, quote unquote, you're the senior developer where people are looking up to you for answers and help, right? So when I hit that wall, I was like, okay, do I really want to be the guy that is, you know, responsible for everything? Like most of the companies that I work for, they weren't companies where they have, it's not Google. They don't have, you know, 500 developers, right? And every single thing is spread out to everyone. Most of the companies I work for were like small to medium sized companies. And then once I hit that stage of like senior developer, I got so much responsibility and I had to like pretty much be on top of everything. And I was like, I love to code, but this is not my company. Like, do I really want to be like the guy staying here to 8 o'clock at night, or when their CEO is like, hey man, something's going on with this page, or hey, we're not getting conversions here. Can you go in? And then now I got to be on top of other people that might not be doing their job, and I have to be on top of them. Like, that was something that was like, you know what? Maybe I think this is not what I want to do. And that's when I started like really focusing on becoming like a more like a independent developer, which is like indie developer, and just making income from ideas. Because, you know, as a developer, you get so many ideas, and if you have the skills, you could create them now. So it's like, do you do it for somebody else? Like, I'll give you like a quick story. Like, the last company I worked for, I'm not going to name them, but literally I had to go in and rebuild their whole e-commerce website, which was built on Perl. For They had it built for like 15 years. And
it was built on Perl?
On Perl, yeah.
what we're crying for you.
Yeah, so it was built on Perl. And then I had to convert this. First of all, when I got there, they told me, hey, you're going to be a front-end developer. You're good to go. The front-end developer quit. The senior developer quit. The guy that built the it was like an in-house framework of Perl. That guy quit. Everybody quit. And it's like, by the way, so now you're like the most senior guy here. And I'm like, I thought I was just going to
be a friend. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Now you got to deal with this. So all of this logic from like 15 years of a crazy e-commerce website, I had to rebuild it. And I was going to build it with Ruby on Rails. But at the time, because I was like, let's build it with Ruby. And people were like, nah, we can't build it because there's no Ruby on Rails developers here in Long Island. We got to pick something that we can get locally. So I went with PHP Laravel and like rebuilt the whole website in like 2 months. Like literally my whole freaking beard turned gray. I was like a young kid when I went into that company. I had to rebuild this whole company. But once
PHP aged you, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I can say that. So built it. And then at the end of the day, once I did all of that work, I said, you know what, man? Let me get a little vacation. And then they were like, listen, you're the most senior developer here. You can't take a vacation right now. We just switched over to the new framework, whatever. And then at the same time, from all the changes that I did to this website, they literally made $8 million in that month from all of the new things, because it was old. So I brought in all of the new technologies, you know, React, you know, we connected through Facebook Pixels. We did all of the marketing things that they've never done. Somehow this company was still alive without any of those things. So we just basically took it from 2001 to 2017 in 2-3 months. And then they made like $8 million and I didn't even get a pat on the back. It was like, okay, not even a bonus. So that's when I realized, hold on, I can't be making people millions of dollars and I'm not even getting a cut out of this. You know, so that's when I just realized, you know what, I got to be an independent developer, do my own thing, man. You know, yep. But it's crazy.
I'm curious because we've talked about some of these transitions that you've made. And, you know, John mentors people. I've mentored a number of people and coached a number of people. I've talked to Dave and it sounds like he's worked with some people that he's mentored. I don't know how much you've done outside of work as part of Drifting Ruby or anything, Dave. But we've all kind of been in that position where we've helped some folks along. How do you figure out when it's time to change phases and what that next phase is? Because it seems like you kind of have this epiphany and you move ahead, right? But yeah. That's not necessarily the same thing as, okay, you know, I'm at this place. That's not the place I want to be at anymore. So I'm going to do this other thing, right?
Yeah. Well, I think for younger developers, what I always tell them is you got to have a goal. What exactly you want to do and what you want to get out of this industry, right? A lot of people just think, I just want to learn how to code and get in the game. But if you don't have a plan, you don't have a goal of like, what do you want out of this? Then it's going to be harder to know when you got to switch phases. You know what I'm saying? Because some people might go into their first job and be like, I'm just glad to be here. And they stay there for 10 years, 20 years, right? But then they didn't have a goal to say, you know what? What do I want to do within 5 years? Do I want to become a senior developer? Do I want to become a guy that's creating frameworks, libraries? Do I want to be a guy that's taking risks and creating their own startups? Do I want to create microservices and make income online? Do I want to be a digital nomad and travel the world? Like, it's super important to know what you want to get out of this. ahead of time so you could take the right pathway. You get what I'm saying? Because I always tell people, like online, people ask me all the time, like, man, I'm trying to learn all of these different technologies and all of these different things. I'm like, slow down before you go into learning everything. Find out what is it that you want to do. What's your end goal? And then start learning the technologies according to that goal. So you don't go here and just go crazy learning everything that's out there. You know, so.
Boy, you sound like me. No, the difference is that, you know, instead of asking, you know, where's the transition point or how do I figure that out? People are asking me, how do I keep up? You know, how do I stay current? And usually I'm like, well, if you want to be a system architect, then you need to be learning these things. And if you want to be a crack Ruby developer, you need to be learning these things. And if you want to be a team lead, you need to be learning these things, right? And so it's not how do I keep up on everything? It's how do I learn the right things?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you're hitting on the head there is, you know, okay, well, I want to be the go-to Ruby knowledge expert on my team. Okay, well, then you're going to have to go get that encyclopedic knowledge Ruby, and you're going to have to figure out how to communicate it to others so that they'll come ask you and get the answer they need in a way they understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely.
So speaking of, I think this is really interesting because I also have the same thing. I say it a little bit differently. I tell people, well, you have to know what your goal is, right? More or less exactly the same thing, right? But I think one of the things that, you know, that I encounter a lot because I'm interacting with a lot of people who are just trying to get in coding at all. One of the things that I encounter a lot is, well, what language am I supposed to learn, right? There, if, you know, obviously the first thing that everyone knows that I do Ruby and they're like, Ruby is dead. So like, what do I pick? You know?
And so is like, Latin. That doesn't mean that it's useless.
I hate when people say that.
Yeah. I mean, I have a whole shtick, right? Like, because I'm not trying to sell people necessarily on Ruby. I try to be pretty agnostic, both for my community's sake, and because that's sort of like the way that I am. Like, I'm not really interested in a winner. I program in Ruby because Ruby's awesome and Ruby has won me over. And because I can still make money doing it. And if that were to change, then, you know, I would still probably, I guess if Ruby like suddenly, I don't know, if like Matt's died or something terrible happened, I guess there's a scenario where I could hate Ruby, but unlikely. I'll still probably like Ruby anyway. But what I do every day might change, you know. If that were to change, I'd probably go over there, right? So I'm agnostic in that way, right? I'm a little bit murky, I guess. That's about as mercenary as I get. But, you know, people are like, well, should I jump on this JavaScript bandwagon? And, you know, Charlotte, we have a lot of banks. The banks right now are converting like all their stuff to JavaScript. So there's a ton of JavaScript jobs in town. And like one of the things that I'm like telling people is, I'm like, look, I was like, depends on like what you want to do. If you want to work here in Charlotte, JavaScript's super popular. Across the world, JavaScript appears to have hit some sort of peak and it's coming down, whatever. It's not like it's not popular. You can still find jobs. If you want to find a Ruby job, you're not probably finding it in Charlotte. You're probably looking at a remote thing. And people were like, oh, remote. I didn't even think about that because I don't know. People don't. You know, things like that. Python's actually sort of, but this is all, Python's getting popular in my town or whatever, but this is all specific to what it really takes is like, what are you trying to do, I guess? Like, and that's what I tell people. So anyway, to my question, which I was trying to lead to and spent 10 minutes going down rabbit holes, like, what do you tell people? Like, what kinds of advice you give? Like, I was digging through Coding Phase here and I see tutorials for like a number of different things. What's sort of your take currently? How do you roll? And do you feel like, because I don't think that you're giving people advice on how to find jobs in New York City, correct me if I'm wrong, probably giving them advice on how to find them, like in general, wherever they're at, right?
Mm-hmm.
How are you giving advice? How does that plan out?
So the way I tell people is, first of all, you got to look locally. Just like how you were saying, if over there in North Carolina, in your hometown, there's a lot of jobs popping up with Node.js, then you should learn Node.js. Right? Or JavaScript, right? And that's what you want to basically start with to find a job, right? You can start with whatever programming language you want, but you want to look at the job market in your area to, from there, make a decision on what type of language you should choose and which one you should start focusing on. Because if you can't find a job, you know, then it's going to be, you know, to me, I'll be like, what's the point, right? Like, even though we do love to program and to code, but we still got to sustain ourselves and take care of our families, right? So you're going to have to pay your bills. So you have to make sure you look online in locally and find out what are the things that people are looking for. Myself, I started with HTML, CSS, JavaScript. That's it, right? Some people say HTML, CSS, not even programming languages. That's fine. But that's where I start off, right? And then from there, you know, I jumped into Ruby and I learned programming, like real programming from Ruby, because it was just fun, right? It was like my first love. It's like, damn, this is actually fun. It wasn't like me smashing my head on the keyboard with JavaScript. It was just like, okay, everything makes sense. And it's more like English. But at the same time, I got a job. My first job, official job that I could say, was a company that they were using Ruby on Rails. So I was the front end guy, junior front end guy. And then they would tell me, hey, could you go into this models and change this and that? Or could you create some routes for this page? Or, you know, so from there, I started learning Ruby on Rails from that opportunity. But not everybody that's going to be out there in the world, like, is going to get those opportunities to say, okay, it being introduced by the job from Ruby on Rails. So you have to make a decision on what's in your area. What language can you get a job as soon as possible? And for me, my students, I always tell them, basically stick with, in the beginning, Node.js or JavaScript, right? JavaScript, Node.js, depending on the area. PHP is always good. You know, some people always say, PHP is dead. Bro, PHP is out there. It's not the best language. I kind of hate it, but at the same time, you know, it's like a language that no matter where you go, you could go to, I'm here in Florida. Florida doesn't even have that many jobs, but you look online, PHP. You go to freaking Louisiana, PHP. It doesn't matter where you go. In freaking Nigeria, there's guys finding jobs over there in PHP. So well, I'll tell people. Yeah,
I'll chime in on that too. You can go on Odesk. You can hang out your shingle as a WordPress developer. You have to have a passing knowledge of PHP and a half passing knowledge of what they call the WordPress codex.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can work in WordPress. You can get a job tomorrow, right? You can find contract work tomorrow writing mm-hmm. PHP. Now, it's not my favorite language, but mm-hmm. you can find work tomorrow doing it. So,
yeah.
And, you know, more than the business people hiring mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Go learn Gatsby. Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy experience for your customers? I mean, let's face it. The only way you're going to know that is by actually running it on production. So go figure it out, right? You run it on production, but you need something plugged in so that you can find out where those issues are, where it's slowing down, where it's having bugs. You need something like that there. And Raygun is awesome at this. They just added the performance monitoring, which is really slick, and it works like a breeze. I love it. It's like you get the ray gun and you zap the bugs. Anyway, definitely go check it out. It's going to save you a ton of time, a ton of money, a ton of sanity. I mean, let's face it, grepping through logs is no fun, and having people not able to tell you that it's too slow because they got sidetracked into Twitter is also not fun. So go check out Raygun. They are definitely going to help you out. There are thousands of customer-centric, customer-focused software companies who use Raygun every day to deliver great experiences for their customers. And if you go to Raygun and you use our link, you can get a 14-day free trial. So you can go check that out at rubyrogues.com/Raygun.
Oh, you like, tell me, do you like Gatsby? Just a question.
I've played with it some. There are things I like and things I don't, but that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. No, I was just wondering because I had some crazy experience with Gatsby and I was like, man, you know, because I'm coming from like that Ruby. I remember I used to use Jekyll, right? And for static site websites and it was so simple, right? But I jumped into Gatsby and I was like, man, there's a lot of stuff in here that I was like, that one you don't need.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah. And I was like, for all the good things that I heard, people were talking about it to me like, man, this is the second coming of Jesus Christ. Like, this thing is going to save the world. And I'm like, okay, cool. I actually switched up my website. I used to have codingphase.com on Gatsby and all of my SEO dropped. Like, everything that I freaking transferred over, I was like, bro, this was like a huge mistake. Some people, they love it. But for me, I was like, man, this is not for me. But
what was the website on before that was much better at SEO?
WordPress, you know, WordPress, whatever I put up on WordPress, it would just pick it up. First, I had it on Jekyll and then WordPress. And then I switched it up to Gatsby because people was like, telling me, you got to switch to Gatsby, bro. Like, this is the next thing. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's try it. And yeah, well, it didn't go so well for me.
Well, but amongst us chickens here, devchat.tv was on 11DJS, which is another static site generator like Jekyll. Mm-hmm. And I moved it to WordPress. And the performance went way up. The SEO went way up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a win all around. And it made a lot of things a lot easier because I have a team of people working on the podcast that don't code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's one of the reasons why I feel like a lot of companies, I think everybody knows that you can do some better things with other languages and other frameworks. But WordPress, just for SEO by itself and just the ease of use of, like, you could give it to your mom and be like, hey mom, write a blog here, and she'll understand if she ever posted on Facebook. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's that simple. But yeah, man, I think a lot of people, you know, they should definitely give it a try. You know, going back to like what I was saying before, just for anybody that's looking for a job and getting their opportunity in the beginning, you know, just look in your local area. You know, a lot of people, they focus so much in like San Francisco. They're like, oh man, I want to get a job at Google. And I'm not a Google type of guy. You know what I mean? Like, I always tell people, like, I'm not a Google type of guy. I don't see myself leaving where I live, my comfort zone, to go all the way to San Francisco or move back to New York City, right? So I need to learn technologies that are in the local areas where I move to. Like right now here in Florida, I'm really going deep into Shopify. So Shopify is huge. Yeah. So that's the next frontier for me now. Like, this is where I'm putting all my eggs into the Shopify basket. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm loving it. I'm loving Shopify and creating applications for it. I have so many friends of mine who created apps within 3 months, and then 6 months later, they're making $50,000 a month just from the application on a monthly recurring basis. Like, you can't even, you know, for somebody like myself, I'm an independent developer, right? I think of myself like I'm a web developer, but I have the mentality of a game developer, of an indie game developer. And it's like, I love to code, but I need to be able to sustain myself and to be able to find different ways to make income from my skills, not just working for somebody else. And Shopify provides that, man. You know what's crazy? That I can't remember if it was here on this podcast that you guys had somebody that was like doing Shopify years ago, like that they were talking about Shopify. I can't remember it, you know, but I know that I heard it from here, from somewhere in devchat.tv, right? I know I heard it here somewhere, but it's crazy that years later, I'm like, man, Shopify is still like kicking. You know, when people be like, Ruby is dead, I'm like, it's like, come on, bro. Like, you know, it's like, but it's supposed to be fast. You could do so much with Node.js or with Scala or with all of this different language. I'm like, bro, it doesn't matter what you use. It's the product that you're building. And at the same time, if you're having fun with it, like all the projects that I ever built with Ruby, that's where I had fun with, you know, building. It wasn't like a job. It was more like, okay, cool. Let's do some Ruby and some Ruby on Rails or work on whatever, you know. Sometimes I just love coding on Ruby by itself with no framework, you know.
So if we can boil down what you talk about into kind of a couple of steps that people can take, because I want this to be really actionable, right? I feel like we've kind of got people, we've got the energy up, we've got people excited. They're going, okay, you know, I could do this. I can get into coding, or I can level up on coding. You know, what are kind of the steps that people should be taking at this point for their careers? You know, whether they're trying to get in or whether they've been in it for a little while.
Okay. So I will say for a junior developer, like I said, look into your local area, what you want to learn, right? What's actually out there. Focus on those skills. You don't have to be a master. This is the biggest mistake that I made. It took me a whole year to get a job, not because I couldn't work and I didn't have the skills to be already productive in a team. It was literally, I thought I needed to become a master of JavaScript, right? Or to learn everything that's out there. And it's more like, okay, look at what companies are asking for, you know, even on job descriptions, what is it that they're going to need? And just start applying, you know, don't think that you have to be an expert. Just apply to every job that's available out there. And even if it says, you know, sometimes senior level. I've seen jobs where they were asking for a senior developer, but in reality, they had you doing like simple things. I'm like, you know, I've gotten hired to jobs where I'm like, okay, I got hired as a senior developer, but I'm like, why am I building the static pages? Like, you know what I mean? So, So there's situations like that where, you know, a junior developer might think like, you're going to build so many complex things. Bro, just apply to the jobs, right? Go to every interview. Don't worry about failure. Not everybody gets a job on the first try. That's normal, right? Go in. And then once you have your job and you start working there, try to soak it up. Soak up all of the skills and the things that they're working with in that company. So you can also level up and say, you know what? What is it that I want from here? Because now you got a job, right? Do you want to continue working as a developer for, you know, for X amount of years at that company? Or do you want to say, you know what? I would love to try another different technology, a different framework, different library. Then from there, you got to decide, do I leave the company or not, right? If they're not paying you properly, my advice is always leave. Don't stay there expecting that they're going to give you a $50,000 raise in 2 years. Like most companies come in and give you maybe five in the beginning. They'll be like, you're making 50, you'll get 55 next year, right? So don't stay there forever. But then from there, just once you hit that point of, I would say like a mid-level developer and you're looking around like, do I want to continue working for other people? If the company or the industry that you're in is interested to you, then, you know, continue with that. If not, find other ways so you can make income for yourself. Like, that's one thing that I always tell people. Like, I'm all about the income. Like, I keep people up, you know, updated on how much money I make. I tell them exactly how I continue to grow, right? What do I do with my income? How do I invest into my own businesses? I try to share all of that so people can see that you could start here as a junior developer, but then you can continue to develop yourself into, you know, becoming your own CEO, your own business owner, right? Create your own ideas. So you have to figure out as you continue to progress to see like, where do you want to go with this career, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's something that I would say to anybody. And, you know, like for another thing that I would say for like mid-level to like senior level developers is like, I see a lot of guys that they get stuck at companies. They've been there for 5 years and they're like, man, I don't know if I'm, you know, how you were saying before, am I up to date with what's going on with the industry or this and that? And it's like, sometimes you got to go out there and start really, you know, seeing what's out there, right? Seeing what technologies people are using. Because I remember, you know, when I first started, just to go real quick back to this story, but there was a point where I went to a company, I got hired as a contractor, and there was a guy who was doing .NET for 10 years, and he didn't know anything about what was happening in JavaScript. And I was like, how are you just focusing on just one specific thing and never learn what's going on in the whole ecosystem? And that's one of the biggest mistakes that I see from like mid to senior level developers, where they get comfortable at a company, this is what they use, and they never try to learn anything else. And God forbid they lose that job. Now they have to stay at home for 6 months to try to catch up with what's going on with the industry. So those are a little quick gems that I could drop in there.
I'm gonna quit my job and start a Shopify store now. Oh my God. You've inspired me. I'm gonna email them today. I'm gonna say, screw you guys. I'm gonna make 50 grand a month on Shopify. That's mad. My God.
I will say is the Shopify apps ecosystem is huge. And just the fact that you actually developing things, it's more like a server and you just connect into the APIs with Shopify. But there's so much potential for developers. And that's something that I try to always bring out for people. Like there's so many people that are so bright. I saw somebody on Twitter that I really respect. But something that I saw from him on Twitter, he was like, does anybody know how to make side income? And I'm like, bro, you're like a creator of like libraries, frameworks. You got hundreds of thousands.
Welcome to the internet.
Hundreds of thousands of followers. And I'm like, bro, you don't know. You can't use the skills that you've learned and accumulated all these years to make income for yourself. And I was like, it just felt weird. And I feel like most people, most developers, we need to talk and give other people ideas of like different ways of how they can make their own income, you know?
Yep.
But I guess my question is, does Shopify take a 30% cut?
Well, yeah, they definitely take the cut. It's like Apple, right? You want to put an application on Apple, somebody's going to eat. They're going to be like, well, we got to eat. You know, it's our platform.
I knew that we were going to get to Apple.
Shopify's cut for the marketplace?
Can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure it's somewhere up there.
Hey, are you stealing my idea, Dave?
No, not all, man. Just trying to help you get the full picture here.
We're going to have our first arm wrestle on the podcast.
I think he meant that he's going to take a cut of everyone's
apps
that they're making. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's...
I just don't know that anyone would agree to it, but...
I think it's like 20%, I think. I can't remember it, but I believe it's 20%, which is better than Apple. So, you know...
Well, I learned something. I didn't even know you could do that with Shopify. That's something I'm going to look into. Can I ask you a British question? Mm-hmm. I started working projects in the USA about 5 or 6 years ago. And we were dealing with a guy from HP. And my British colleagues said, we really don't like that guy. You know, he's really rude. And I had to explain to them, he's not rude. He's from New York.
Yeah.
Because they just didn't know, right? They had no insight. But to me, he was just like a normal guy. What's it like the East Coast versus West Coast developer scene? Because me outside looking in, I can see a big divide there. It's like night and day. Do you think that's true? There is an East Coast versus West Coast developer divide, and which is better?
Well, I would say in the East Coast is more hustle in the sense of like, you know, there's definitely a lot of cutthroat, right? There's a lot of people that will go in and take credit for other people's work, and everybody's trying to become, it's like the teacher's pet, right? There's a project manager and everybody try to do that, right? But compared to like the West Coast, when I've been to San Francisco, it feels like everybody's talking about, this is the new startup, or hey, I just got, you know, this amount of freaking, you know, stocks or something from like this company that they hire me or something like that, right? And like in the East Coast, you don't really see that. Like everybody's is to themselves, and it's New York City, you know, like you can't BS yourself, you know, with people. Like people is not really trying to take that.
For me, there's a lot more straight talk on the East Coast.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a lot of fake personalities in the West Coast. Sorry for anybody in San Francisco. I love you guys too, but you know, this, you guys know it's pretty fake. Everybody, you know, I've seen situations where people take people's ideas and things like that. Act like they're friends and things like that. So that happens all the time over there. But yeah, New York is different. New York is, if you're from New York, it's like, I always say this, like, I feel like there's really not that many people, even on YouTube, that it's like myself, like even the way I talk, like the way how my type of aura is, right? Somebody, like you said, somebody in England, if I say, this guy's rude, you know what I mean? Like, but this is New York, kid. You know what I mean? Like, this is how we are, right? It's a certain way, certain swagger, certain type of individuals that New York City is a hard city, right? So at the end of the day,
New York City is a great city. I love New York. It's just people aren't used to it, you know? They're like, oh, you know, they think that people are being aggressive, but they're not. This is completely normal.
Yeah, that's normal over there.
Well, what's interesting too is that you've got, so New York and San Francisco, yeah, they have different cultural incentives, but then you've got some smaller tech hubs in the area, right? You know, John lives in or near one. Dave lives in or near one. I live near Salt Lake City, and which is also, you know, and the incentives here are different than they are in either of those places, right? Because you don't have the investment feeding frenzy, status building because you're part of a blah, 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 blah mm-hmm. kind of startup that you get in the San Francisco areas. You get a little bit of that in like Seattle and things like that. But Seattle is even different because it's basically Microsoft and Amazon going head to head to hire developers, you know, but then you move into Austin or Salt Lake or Atlanta, you know, and you get some of these other areas and they're just trying to build a business and make it run, right? And so they don't get rewarded for kind of the straight shooting, you know, cutthroat feel that you get out of New York City either. And mm-hmm. so it really depends on where you go and what incentives are. And yeah, the incentives in San Francisco is if you're part of a successful skyrocketing startup, you've got status. And in New York, if you're part of a successful, high profile, well thought of business, then you get status. And, you know, out here in Salt Lake, if you're running a multi-million dollar business, then people look at you as successful. And so it really changes from area to area. And like even Florida, you know, depending on what part of Florida you're in, if you're in the Tampa, Orlando area or Miami, I mean, the culture there is a little bit different. The feel there is a little bit different. And what people recognize there is a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's one thing that, you know, one of the main reasons why I moved out of New York City, because me personally, I never really care about the company or if it's Google, Facebook, or whatever multi-billion dollar company it is, right? What I care about is the people that work there. And do the team work good, right, together? And are people helpful? Can, you know, people are people nice, right? Like, for me, I always found that outside of New York City, right? I never worked in San Francisco, but I've worked in New York. And I see, like, a lot of the big companies, people are just like, you know, nobody's really friendly like that and things like that. But once I started working in places like Long Island, which is outside of New York, then you go to Connecticut, right? You have even here places in Tampa where I live now. Like, it's the mood is completely different. Like, there's nobody like saying, well, I work at Uber and I've been working as a Stripe, or I've been working, like, nobody cares about like the name. It's more like, hey man, how's the culture in that company? They let me get to work remotely 2 days out of the week and things like that. Those are the things that people really get excited for here, from what I've noticed, you know, and I kind of like it like that better than just saying I got a big company, you know. In YouTube nowadays, like, a lot of people, they're blowing up off like people, like company's name, just to say, hey, I'm an ex Facebook, I'm an ex this and that. Like, everybody wants to put that out there. And it's like, people like myself, I don't even care who's from what company you're from, you know. But some people, they care about that, you know. The young kids,
yeah,
if you're listening, like, you know, it's not really about the company. It's about, you know, are you making an impact in that company? If you're developer number 2023, like, you're not really making an impact in that company, you know? So that's how I feel about it.
Cool. Well, is there anything else that we should go over, team, before we head to picks?
We haven't talked about being a YouTuber.
That's right. How do I become famous, Joe?
Yeah. So YouTube is one of those situations where it's kind of weird, because not everybody can do YouTube, right? Who wants to put their face on the internet all day and, you know, get criticized, get judged, right? So it's a certain type of individual that can really do YouTube. And also to understand that when you drop something, even if you could be famous on whatever platform it is, that doesn't guarantee you success on YouTube. So you could have 1 million followers on Instagram or Twitter. On YouTube, it's the algorithm that's going to put you there. So no matter what, you're going to have to cater to it. You know, I myself, I've been doing YouTube since 2017, like January. So now I only have like 65,000 subscribers. And that's because I never followed the YouTube algorithm. So I just create my content. And when people find me, you know, they enjoy it and they love what I do. But YouTube is a different animal, you know. You have to play the ball. You ain't got to play ball with YouTube and Google. You got to do what they like, you know. A minute, it has to be 10 minutes per videos, or maybe you have to create clickbaity titles, or create content that you might not be interested on, or there might be a situation where you become a slave to the views. So, like, let's say, for example, somebody creates one type of video that actually works for them, and then they create all of their content after that, right? Like, I'll give you an example. I saw one guy that I used to follow. I think his name was like Meet Kevin or something like that on YouTube. And he used to create really good real estate videos, right? Because that's what he does. He's a real estate agent and shows you everything about the market. But he has success. He dropped one video talking about the stimulus package from Donald Trump. And then now every video that he does has to do with the stimulus package, because it's going to give them views. That's what YouTube has already said. Hey, this is what we're going to promote. This is what we're going to do for you. right? It's the same thing for us developers. If let's say you have one tutorial that is popular, let's say you did a Ruby tutorial and it became popular, YouTube wants you to just do those tutorial videos. So for some people, they might like it. Some people might not like it. You know, YouTube is not for everybody. You know, it's something that everybody has to keep in mind if they want to get into YouTube. And just try to be original. That's it. You know?
Are there any YouTube channels? Obviously, you've got your own. Are there any other development channels on YouTube that you think are really good that you like yourself?
Yeah, so I like Reversi Media, who's my friend. I also like...
Brad's terrific.
Yeah, he's super legit when it comes to the tutorials. And I love that, you know, when I basically started that whole movement of like doing like talking headshots and talking about development and talking about things about jobs and opportunities and things like that. And that's on Brad. Like, really put yourself out there and start showing the people more about you. Because before, he only dropped tutorials. And like, I really look forward to his videos when he shares his opinion on, you know, maybe a new technology or something that has been happening with his life. You know, sometimes, you know, that's the best thing about his channel. It has great tutorials. And then he also shares like so much about what's going on in the industry or things that people should look out for. So really, you know, advice videos. So I like him, you know, Traversing Media, Forrest Knight, which is another young developer. I think he's from Virginia. Let's see. I like Chris Sean, who's also, he does like more like vlogging. So he shares his life as a developer. And let me see one more. Let's see, Forrest Knight. Let's see. I don't know. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it for now. You know, that could come up to my mind right now, you know, but those guys definitely are legit. Oh, this other kid called Ben Awad. If you guys don't know who he is, you guys got to check him out. He's pretty legit, super knowledgeable kid. I love his videos and he's funny too. So yeah, man, YouTube has a lot of personalities and that's what's great about YouTube. I feel like, you know, when back in the days, it was all about bloggers and, you know, people writing tutorials, like you couldn't relate to those people because it was just like text, right? Now, at least with YouTube, you can see different personalities, even how they talk. Maybe you can say, you know what? I like the type of advice this person gives, right? So YouTube is great for that, man. And there's a lot of guys in there, you know?
Yep. Very cool. We'll have to get links to all of those in the show notes. If you put them in the chat, we'll be able to get them in the show notes.
Yeah.
And definitely. Where do they find your stuff again?
Yeah, so you guys can check me out at youtube.com/codingphase. That will bring you straight to my YouTube channel. And if you guys want to learn how to code and you're a beginner, you're like, you know, at that point in your early stages, you want to build some cool projects, you can check out my website, codingphase.com. I try to teach it in a way where I'm just more, you know, bringing it to somebody where I could take an Uber driver. He wants to learn how to code. I could teach him, you know, a guy that just came, he's a truck driver or a girl in retail and they want to learn how to code. It's more relatable type of projects and things that they could get interested on, you know, but yeah, definitely Coding Phase, just pretty much Google Coding Phase. As soon as you see that, it's going to pop up everything about me. All right.
Yep. Very cool. Have you thought about learning to do native iOS development? Are you using Swift at work? Or maybe you've considered writing applications for macOS? We have a podcast that covers all of that called iFreaks. We have a new panel and a lot of exciting things to talk about, so come check us out at iFreaksShow.com. All right, well, let's jump in and do some picks. John, why don't you start us out with the picks?
All right, so I'm going to start out with, I was naming a thing. Well, I'm sorry. I already had a name for a project, and it was really awful. And I wanted to name it something kind of cool. And to be frank, I'm not actually all that good at like naming things, but somebody turned me on to this workbook like a few years ago. And now I use it like every time I have to name a project. It's called Don't Call It That, a naming workbook. And I just bought like the Kindle edition. I think there's even like, I don't know, there's like a second edition out yet. I have no idea if the second edition works. I've only used the first one. I just use the same one over and over again. But yeah, I just go through the freaking workbook and like by the end, I have a pretty sweet name. So, or at least I think it's sweet. So anyway, I had to do that this past week and I was like, oh, I should tell people about this. So I'll link that. Yeah. I don't really know how to express like how much of a struggle it is for me to name something. Like it's just hard for me. And this like totally makes that not hard for me. So yeah, that's what I got.
Awesome. Luke, what are your picks?
I've been working on a giant 100 camera CCTV system. The reason I've been working on it is because it broke. People only ever ask me to look at things when they break. But this is quite a cool system. It's made by a company called Unify or Ubiquiti. And the nice thing about it is the systems are just normal Linux systems, and you can log into it. You can install your own software. You can kind of hack it up. It's got a nice API. So although I kind of encountered it in a broken state, I've really been quite a convert to it because you can do really exciting stuff like kind of motion triggers and custom actions. And my second pick is a YouTube channel. It's Peter Solnicker's YouTube channel. I've been watching that. I think he's really interested in the stuff he's doing with DryRB. So that's my second pick.
Very cool. Dave, what are your picks?
All right, so just one pick today, and it is the Elgato Stream Deck. So if you don't know what it is geared towards live streamers, so like gamers and Twitch streamers, but I'm actually using it for a different purpose. So I do a lot of video editing on the Drift and Ruby screencasts, and also a lot of other just programming and tinkering around with things. So they have a nice little library, but then also you can customize it and create your own plugins. And essentially the Stream Deck is a macro keyboard. Each little button has its own LCD panel, so you can program it to be whatever you want and then have a series of macros behind those plugins. So it can speed up your editing and make it just a lot nicer of an experience instead of having to hit like Command Shift, Control, Alt, 4 or whatever to do a series of keystrokes. You can just hit one little button and it'll do it, and it can switch based on what application you're on. So I've actually been creating some plugins lately, which might spark me to jump over to start learning C++ or Objective-C or Swift to create some more extensible plugins. But that's been my latest obsession right now.
Nice. Very cool. I'm going to throw in a couple of picks of my own. So I've been working on launching the DevRev, which is, you know, we've talked a bit about careers and growth and things like that. And yeah, you know, a lot of the themes we've talked about here as far as just finding that freedom, that independence, that's what the DevRev is. So the DevRev is the developer evolution. And it's built around that idea of, you know, figuring out where you want to end up and having the freedom to pursue it. And I'm working on putting together basically I'm kind of tentatively calling it in my head the MVP bootcamp, which is essentially how to become the MVP of your development team. People ask how to become a senior developer, and it's like, well, hire somebody who will give you the title is kind of my answer to that. You know, find because really, I mean, that's it, right? So what kind of a developer do you want to be? What kinds of contributions do you want to make? That's really where the power is. And those are the kinds of people that people are generally thinking of when they're thinking, I want to be a senior developer, is I want to be a major contributor to the community and to my team. So I'm working on pulling that together and then having an ongoing membership where we talk about MVP-ish behaviors like speaking at conferences and contributing to open source and stuff like that. And I'm probably going to launch that this next week. But yeah, so go check out the DevRev. It's at thedevrev.com. And I don't have a URL for the MVP bootcamp yet, but if you go to Ruby or devchat.tv/MVP, it'll take you to the right place. But yeah, that's what I'm looking at. And so it's very in line, I think, with what Joe's doing. And I know, Joe, you have a membership too, which I want you to plug as one of your picks. But yeah, I mean, I think the developer community needs a little bit more thought around this kind of thing, where it's, how do I take control of my career? How do I build the skills that I need? And I'm not just talking technical skills. I'm talking about the essential or soft skills that we're dealing with. And so I just love the conversation we had today. But yeah, so those are my picks. And then I just threw some ribs in the smoker this morning. And so I'm also going to pick smoking meat because yum. And yeah, those are my picks. Joe, what do you got for us?
All right. So I'm going to give you guys my picks. I'm going to start off with levels.io. If you guys don't know who this is, his name is Peter Levels. You guys can check him out on Twitter. But go to levels.io. It's a blog of this developer's journey from pretty much learning to code to what he is now. He's the creator of Digital Nomad. Was it nomadlist.io? If you guys probably have heard of that website, it's a website where they give you all of the information about every city, you know, how's the internet, all of those things, right? But this guy changed my life. This is like the person that I follow when I first started learning how to code. And, you know, everything from me becoming an independent developer, I pretty much have learned it from him, you know, as he goes and shares his life, like, oh, when he just first made $300 on a plugin, or he just, you know, created his first subscription website and he hit $20 a month or $50, it continues to grow. I think it's super important to find guys like this, especially if you want to become independent developer. So definitely levels.io. And my second pick again is going to be codingphase.com. I think codingphase.com is a great platform for anybody that wants to learn how to code and is a beginner. You know, I always plug it in, but like I said, man, you know, it's a shameless plug, right? Codingphase.com. All right, guys.
Awesome. Yeah. And I saw that if you go to your YouTube channel, you have like a $7 for the first month thing, which is super cheap to try out something like that. So.
Yeah, definitely. I even have, you know, in all my videos, there's a $1 trial. Like, like my whole point.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's like the whole point of Coding Phase is just to make it accessible. You have over 50 courses in there. It's total, I think it's like 72 that I have on the website. So it's a lot of content for almost nothing, right? It's like $5, $10, right? So it don't really matter, you know, but all I really care about is just to have people learning and just continue to grow. Right. So, yeah, man, go check out codingphase.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap up. Thanks for coming. This was a lot of fun, Joe.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I just want to say before we leave, guys, I was listening to this guy's. I'm talking about years ago, right? And I was on the other side just listening to these guys. And I'm like, man, to be here is such a freaking honor, man. Like, imagine you just learning how to code and listening to guys that are experts and guys that have so much knowledge. And then finally, they, you know, they acknowledge your talents and what you're doing out here for the community. So every single one of you guys can definitely be here one of these days, okay? So keep doing you.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll just wrap it up here. Until next time, folks, max out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.